Hello, everyone. This is Joe Overby with the Auto Remarketing Podcast, bringing you another Used Car Week edition of our show. Up next for you on our collection of Used Car Week podcasts is an economist roundtable that I got to moderate with some of the leading economists in the automotive space, including Tony Hughes, Jonathan Smoke, and Tom Contos. Really enjoyed talking with these guys, and hope you give it a listen and learn a lot.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the National Remarketing Conference workshop on the Economist Roundtable, Unpacking the Trends of Today. I'm Joe Overby. I'm the senior editor of Auto Remarketing. And before we get started, I just a full disclosure, this session is being recorded for the Auto Remarketing podcast. So our panelists and attendees, let's keep the swearing to a minimal today. But I want to thank these gentlemen for being here today and sharing their expertise with us. And we'll get started by having each of you introduce yourselves and your company. And Jonathan Smoke, we'll start with you.
All right. Jonathan Smoke, I'm the chief economist for Cox Automotive. And for those who aren't familiar with the Cox Automotive brand, that's Manheim for most of the people in the room, but Auto Trader, Kelley Blue Book, Dealer Track, V Auto. And for an economist, access to all that data is a dream come true. I've been in the industry just a little less than 2 years. Originally came from real estate, so it's been an interesting time to enter the market and learn things. And I'm also known as DJ Smokey Smoke, and we might get into music later.
Yeah, my name's Tony Hughes. I'm managing director and head of specialized modeling at Moody's Analytics. I currently live in London, but I lived in the U.S. for about a dozen years. Have worked in the automotive industry, mainly on the credit side, for more than a decade. We've recently gotten into modeling, forecasting auto residual values. The last thing I'll say very quickly is that I'm actually a columnist for the Global Association of Risk Professionals. So if you want to sort of, you know, broaden your understanding of credit risk and how it's modeled, then pick up my column, by all means. Tom?
Good afternoon, everybody. Tom Contos with Car Auction Services, chief economist. And been around the business now for about 25 years and many of these types of conferences, and enjoying the evolution of our industry as it gets more and more data-oriented. I like to kind of think of myself as one of the folks that kind of got that started years ago when some of our customers started asking for detailed information on their portfolio of assets being remarketed in comparison to perhaps what I might have been sharing with the industry through industry reports. Everybody was coming back to me and saying, well, how's the situation for rental cars, or how's the situation for off-lease units, and how does that differ from your macro trends? So that spawned a lot of analytical products that we've been sharing for many years with our clients, and we'll hope to continue to do and expand on those through the many acquisitions Cars made in recent years in the analytics realm.
And Tom has some pretty cool t-shirts with him. So at the end of this session, we'll have a Q&A, and the folks that ask the best questions, Tom's going to toss you a t-shirt. So. Well, since you guys each are economists, we'll start with some general overall economic trends. And, you know, all the things you guys pay attention to and our audience pays attention to, whether it's rising interest rates, oil and gas prices, tariffs, whether or not they come or not, what are some of the macroeconomic trends that you guys are watching, particularly as it relates to how they might impact the auto industry? And Tom, we'll start with you, and guys, if you all offer follow-up as
okay,
well.
Okay, thank you. I mean, all of the above. I mean, that's sort of the survey we're trying to do, I think, as economists, is keep up with the various economic indicators, including those that relate to interest rates or, you know, GDP growth or unemployment. A few points I make a lot lately is, you know, with the low unemployment rate, that's a good thing for our business, whether you're in new or used vehicle sales. The paychecks create an ability to make payments. But interest rates are probably the area that I'm focusing quite a bit on these days, because of course the Fed you know, and everybody does a lot of Fed watching, but with the Fed doing sort of a quarter per quarter, that's kind of the anticipation of what interest rates are going to do. The question then very quickly becomes, what do you think that's going to do for car payments, new and used? And so that's an area we can talk about as we proceed, but that's an area I'm focusing quite a bit on. Recognizing, though, that our business is pretty creative in making it possible for people to get in a new or used vehicle, regardless, not totally regardless, but in spite of rises in interest rates. So, you know, the moving parts that dealers and manufacturers, banks can use to try to still, and consumers. Consumers can choose to buy a used vehicle, for example, instead of a new vehicle if the payment becomes prohibitive for them. So, and consumers can also choose to buy less vehicle. We've been seeing an escalation in new vehicle transaction prices over time. So if you take all the moving parts with regard to term, rate subvention, you know, shifting sales from new to used, buying lower priced vehicles, putting more money down, what's the trade-in value gonna do? All of those moving parts, I think, still allow for us to be pretty optimistic about what new and used vehicle sales will do in spite of a rising interest rate environment. But that's obviously something we'll know as those rates do continue to rise.
Your thoughts, Tony?
Yeah, well, I'm a risk guy, so I tend to, and what Tom's saying is exactly right, which is that the economy is in great shape at the moment. And so I like to focus, as a risk person, the upside's probably fairly thin at the moment. And so I'll focus on the downside, give you some things to worry about potentially. But one of the issues that we're focusing on at the moment with the Fed is that obviously the unemployment rate at the moment is very low. It's well below the consensus estimate of the natural rate of unemployment. So we're beyond full employment. And so as a result of this, in a sense, the labor market has to deteriorate in order for us to get back to a long-term stable position. And so the question around that is how well the Fed manages that and how well they're able to land the plane on the tarmac, okay, to use a line that Mr. Mullally would find very familiar. So, you know, so the question is, you know, if the Fed, you know, managed to pull this off, one thing I'd say is that you could make the argument that they've never been able to successfully do this without a recession. They've usually done it to varying degrees of piloting ability. And, you know, so in the 2001 recession, for example, they you know, got it pretty well, and there was a relatively mild recession that followed. And in various other times, like in the 1990s, the recessions were much deeper. So it's something to very much, you know, be concerned about and worry about. The other things that would be on my radar would be, you know, things like, you know, the moves against international free trade, which concerns me not only because of the, you know, because I'm an economist and I believe that free trade is a good thing, okay, but I'm also worried in the short term about transition costs. So if this new regime comes into play and we all have to start to learn to live with it, then there's going to be substantial transition costs as supply chains readjust and so forth. And the third thing I'd put on everyone's radar screen from a risk perspective is the new accounting standard, CECL. Okay, which comes into play over the next couple of years, and certainly for the auto industry, that you know, that has the potential to have a very, very large impact on the structure of the business and how it operates.
Making sure I'm not the most pessimistic person in the room. There is no question what Tony and Tom before said absolutely characterized all of the things that we're paying attention to. This is typical. At this point of the economic cycle, we typically are battling rising interest rates, and why that becomes relevant, if you just look at what the average auto loan rate today versus what it was a year ago, it's up over 1.5 percentage points, or over 150 basis points. That translates, if everything else is the same, almost 4% payment inflation. But of course, everything is not the same, because both new and used vehicle prices are up. We actually have credit tightening that's rising the premium, especially for lower credit quality borrowers. So what we're really seeing is escalating inflation that for the short term makes the used market even stronger, because turn the clock back, and 2 or 3 years ago, we had the absolute largest pool you could have for people to be able to buy new, because interest rates were at all-time lows. You had credit as loose as it's been in this cycle, especially for automotive lending. And leases were at incredibly low rates, because at that point, residual forecasts were much higher. So it was a perfect avenue for finding a payment that worked in the new vehicle market. Now with all this inflation, the pool for new has shrunk. The pool for used is enormous, because we have 3.7% unemployment, and we have consumer confidence at an 18-year high. And people need transportation in this country to be able to work and take care of their family. So in the short term, it's very positive. But where this always leads is a place in which the economy inevitably turns down. And I'll just give you two of the industries that I've had the most experience with in life that represent the two largest transactions consumers ever do. Real estate and automotive are incredibly intertwined with finance, and as a result, when interest rates move up, they tend to start to see declining sales. And what have you been seeing declining more than new vehicle sales this year has been home sales. And that represents about 22% of the U.S. economy between those two. So it's no coincidence that you hear announcements like from GM last week that they are giving early retirement offers to 18,000 employees. Eventually, that starts to ripple into the employment situation that Tony was pointing to. It's inevitable. It is the cycle, and that's where we are in the cycle. So, but Tony said it in a much more negative way than I did. The key becomes, how much more are rates going to increase? In the short term, used is benefited, but used can't benefit forever. In fact, there are parts of the country that are already, for deep subprime borrowers, likely butting up against usury limits on where those rates can go, and if the investor can't get compensated on a loan for the risk they're taking on, they simply do not provide the capital for the loans. And so that eventually will start to hurt our market. In the near term, we continue to believe that the used market is going to continue to be strong, and it's the new market where most of the declines are likely to be shaping out.
Well, and to stay a little bit with what you mentioned in terms of finance, Jonathan, start with Tony on this one, but getting into the credit market, you know, sure. You mentioned you do the guest commentary and the Risk magazine and
sure.
and all that. What are some of the things in your writing there? What are you watching in terms of, you know, default rates, credit trends, that sort of thing? What's been some of the topics that you've been addressing?
The interesting thing, I mean, if you go back, you know, 2 or 3 years in the auto sector, you would say that the default rate at that point was exceptionally low. So you were in a situation where, you know, the recession was long gone. You know, you had very strong residual prices in the used vehicle market. The economy was constantly improving. So as a result of that, you know, default and delinquency rates in the auto sector were, you know, well below long-term averages. And then the interesting thing was that you had a few scare pieces being written in the press at that time about the dangers of subprime auto, and that you know, that people, they were pulling out these sort of anecdotes of people who were getting into trouble on various auto loans, and it seemed very much overblown at the time. And subsequent to that, we did have a slight deterioration in the default rate for auto loans and leases. But I'd characterize it more as a situation where we went from exceptionally good back towards normal while still being better than normal, okay? And interestingly, over the last year or so, we've actually seen, in a sense, that deterioration come to an end, and the default rate in the auto sector is actually improving a little bit now at the moment, which is, you know, which just shows that the fears were massively overblown, and
the market's actually in a very good state, given where we are in the cycle.
And if I can add the secret to why it's actually improved this year, I think, has been tax reform. Consumers have ended up with more in their paycheck, and that has meant they've kept current or gotten current on many of their obligations. But when you drill into what's happening with the consumer, the rise in interest rates is really starting to eat into the gains that we all temporarily experienced with the tax reform. So it basically gave us a special boost in 2018, but it's rapidly looking like we're reaching the end of that benefit, and eventually the interest cost starts to overtake companies like GM starting to push people into retirement or do layoffs will start to impact certain portions of the market. And the real estate market alone, especially in the states like California that are seeing pretty substantial declines in sales, will have a very big ripple effect in terms of the local economy. So I think we're already at the early stages of that changing, and therefore you would expect defaults to increase marginally.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for mentioning tax reform, because that gives me a segue into my next question. You know, given that elections were just over a week ago, and you brought up tax reform, any other developments in Washington, D.C., or just in the general political climate that you see impacting automotive? And Tom, we'll start with you on this one.
Maybe not so much automotive as just the general economy. You know, the area of promise, I think, that still exists in light of a divided Congress and, you know, as a result of the election, that might have some concern about the ability of our government to function in a bipartisan manner. I guess I'm encouraged by the prospect of infrastructure spending as a way to kind of sustain economic growth, though there obviously is a concern, too, on the other side of, you know, running too high deficits. But in terms of potential involvement in the economy from our government that could, I think, have a lasting consequence for our nation, infrastructure spending seems like an avenue to get that done in a way that can be done, I think, in a political environment that might be a little bit toxic these days. But so that's an area that I'm sort of looking at. Along with obviously monetary policy and other factors.
Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I'd second Tom's view on infrastructure. I think it's probably, I think it'll be very interesting to see whether anything really much gets done over the next couple of years. There's been a lot of talk about infrastructure in the first 2 years of the Trump presidency, and yet, and he campaigned on that basis, and certainly Democrats would support him if the legislation ever made it to the table in Congress. But and yet there hasn't actually been anything happen along those lines. So as I said earlier, I mean, I think my concern on the political side of things would be more on the trade front, and whether, which is more of a, I think it seems more of an executive action. In terms of the types of things that can and may occur, and if those types of events happen, then we may get some disruption, in various aspects of the auto industry, both for good and bad. I mean, so you know, if tariffs come into the new car market, then obviously we'll get that'll affect new vehicle sales, new vehicle production, but that can also have some flow through into the auto remarketing sector, where basically the prices of second-hand vehicles will also potentially rise.
Yeah, I agree. Trade is a big picture, and even though that's mainly executive, I mean, we've got the immediate issue of will USMCA be ratified by Congress, which it must, in order for that to move through. And of course, we have what else will become of the potential Section 232 auto import that I totally agree is potentially, for the short term, it'll be fantastic for the used vehicle market, but for the long term, it will create quite a bit of challenge for the industry and for the economy in general. I lived in DC for 6 years, so saw this kind of change happen before. And generally speaking, as an economist, you kind of like balance of power because it means effectively nothing bad or good ever happens. And things are pretty much more predictable on that front. I think the thing that I would worry about for the industry is that the changing power in the House of Representatives and the positions on committees that oversee things like NHTSA essentially produces an environment where issues we thought were no longer issues for a while, like dealing with recalls, suddenly become potentially front burner issues for us in the business. And when you think about it in general, when you throw trade and you throw something like recalls into the mix, what do? They're going to decrease the available supply of vehicles for sale. They're likely to increase costs and therefore prices. What are the things consumers are struggling with? Affordability and availability of inventory, and everything on the horizon points in the direction of it getting worse before it getting better. So I'm not too optimistic that Washington's gonna do too much good in the near term.
Well, your point on recalls brought up, reminded me of, I can't remember, one of the publicly traded dealer groups was explaining just how arduous it is for these dealership groups, you know, how the process of getting the vehicle fixed. It has to be ordered. They don't know when the part's coming in. Once the part comes in, you know, that they have to wait on to get shipped to all these dealers.
And this is an expensive, depreciating asset.
Exactly.
That every day counts.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, to shift a little bit more into the wholesale vehicle market, and you guys have brought it up a little bit, but supply, you know, the supply of used cars in the wholesale market, whether it's really low or in the past couple of years really high, has been kind of a major topic in your discussions. But how do you see just the current level of supply and how do you see that impacting wholesale values? And Tom, we'll start with you on this one.
Well, this is the time that we were expecting off-lease volumes in particular to hit their peak. And I think the projections are still that we would continue to see growth in off-lease volume in 18, 19, and then start to taper in 20. So we're kind of dealing at the peak of supply, at least in terms of off-lease. Dealer consignment's down a bit, but for good reasons, dealers are finding good ways to retail the vehicles they take in trade, and more power to them, and be efficient with their inventory management. Definitely the peak of the off-lease bubble was to be timed around this time. And it, just looking back at the peak years of new vehicle sales in 2015 and 2016 and projecting 3 years, it's a fairly safe bet that we are at that peak right now. What's really amazed me and others, I think, and we've tried to really get our arms around why used car values haven't tumbled to the degree one might expect with such supply growth. And I'm increasingly attributing there's various factors on the demand side and on the supply side, but a big factor I think that we have pretty good optics into at CAR in terms of the off-lease volumes is the upstream sales, where we host a lot of the captive finance off-lease volume on our website. So we're able to kind of look at the take rate of the vehicles by the grounding dealer, the non-grounding dealer, and in the open iteration upstream. And that, for example, in the summer months, though we might have had an influx of supply that would have dampened prices as they normally would in the summer, there was an actual increase in the take rate upstream. And that, I believe, disperses the volume in such a way that it minimizes the detrimental impact to wholesale values of the supply growth. So, though you could say that a unit of demand is a unit of demand, whether it's being satisfied upstream or downstream, but the fact of the matter is it's not a fully democratic process in terms of the availability and the inclination of dealers to use the upstream tools. We know that it's a closed environment for two of the three iterations I just described. So I think from the standpoint of getting the car sold before it even gets shipped to the auction, that's prevented a wave of volume from hitting the physical auctions, and that's supported used car values.
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually push back a little bit. I mean, you know, we actually thought that the off-lease volume question was overblown. The thing about off-lease volume is that when my lease ends, my credit's good, I return the vehicle, and then I can either catch the bus home or I can buy another car. So it is an increase in supply, but it's also an increase in the unit, in a unit of demand, usually. And so as a result of that, those supply and demand forces typically are fairly well balanced, and as a result, you wouldn't necessarily expect off-lease volume to represent an increase in supply. The second thing I'd say is that in terms of, you know, if you think about the used car industry as a pipeline, so you have cars entering the pipeline in the form of new vehicle production, and you have vehicles leaving the pipeline in the form of retirements. Okay, and really they're the only two things that can affect the supply of used cars in the industry. I'm talking about supply here as being a slightly distinct concept from the rate of used vehicle transactions, okay, which, and they are basically two different concepts here, okay. So in my mind, the only two things that can really affect used vehicle supply are new car production, either imports or production of various other kinds, and retirements. Now, the interesting thing is that for, you know, a couple of years out of the last three or four, you've had a decline in new vehicle production. So that tends to reduce supply into the used vehicle market with around a 2 or 3 year lag. But this year's sale of new vehicles seems to be perking up a little bit. The other interesting thing to say is that the other end of the pipeline, which is vehicle retirements, so that the average age of the of used vehicles in the US is high and is growing, okay? We did some work using the BLS's consumer survey about a year or so ago, where we estimated the rate of vehicle retirements. And it turns out that the peak in that cycle is actually occurring in 2019 and 2020. So at that time, there's actually going to be a lot of older cars being withdrawn from the ecosystem. And as a result of that, that will have the effect of reducing, of holding down supply.
So I think, at this conference last year where I said the off-lease tsunami was so 2016. And it remains so 2016. We do see the absolute peak occurring in maturities of vehicles that were leased 2 or 3 years ago in 2019. But with pull-ahead programs, and more importantly, two other attributes, the equity position of the vehicles, vehicles who are reaching the end of their maturity today are far more likely to be in the money, meaning they're worth more than the contract says they should be worth. And in that scenario, the take rate by the consumer and by the grounding dealer jumps pretty dramatically. The second thing is the composition of those vehicles are dramatically, let's say, richer, much higher percentage of pickup trucks, SUVs, crossovers, and declining percentages of cars. And those vehicles have much higher likelihood of being taken by either the consumer or the dealer. And so when you look on paper that we should have 8% more, or actually this year it was 11% more maturities, instead we see only 8% growth in off-lease volumes. Next year that trickles down to possibly just 1 or 2 percentage points. And every other source of wholesale volumes is in a declining phase. Unless we have a recession and suddenly we see an uptick in vehicles that are being recovered, we're not going to see an increase in volume. So the pressure on the supply side, it's an entirely different story. And meanwhile, we've got this economy that favors consumers wanting and demanding used vehicles. And so that's the reason why we've had this incredible, you know, strong price performance. And there's really not a lot of risk on the supply side. The risks are more on the demand side. Will interest rates rise too quickly? will there be some change in the economy that really undermines consumers' interest in buying vehicles at all? So I think in general, we're in for another year of pretty stable prices.
I wanted to follow up on a point you made about the vehicles, what they're worth. The contract value is higher than what, the take rate is, of course, consumers are wanting to keep those cars. What is leading to that such high value? Is it just cars not being made now or higher quality or?
Well, it's a combination of things. Clearly, we've had about 18 months of very strong used vehicle price performance, and so that side of the equation certainly helps. But also, residual forecasts have a very, when you look at them historically, they follow a very predictable pattern. They seem to be exactly wrong at points in the cycle 3 years off. And so we were at the absolute wrongest point in 2017, and now residual forecasts are starting to come up again. And correspondingly, this year, suddenly leasing is starting to get stronger in the last couple of months because guess what? Lease payments are far more attractive relative to finance payments than they were 6 months ago, a year ago. It's a very kind of predictable pattern. So the consumers and dealers alike are more in a scenario to be able to benefit from that. And that'll be the case, given historical patterns, for at least the next two, possibly 3 years.
Yeah, I think I just say that when you say that residual forecasts were wrong, I think you should specify whose residual forecasts were wrong. That's the only thing I'd say. So.
I'd like to hope
residual forecasts.
And I'd like to think that folks did bake in the anticipation of the off-lease volume growth into their residual value forecast. So they heeded, you know, warnings by us and others, and just in their own internal analytics, captive finance companies, banks that are in the leasing business, I think heeded the expectation that there would be a lot of off-lease volume right now. And so they did get conservative with their lease residual value setting. And that's helped generate, you know, the opportunity for the consumer to buy the car at a reasonable against market value, or the dealer.
Yeah. Well, we're just out of time, so we're gonna have to stop it there. But if you guys are interested in hearing them talk more these trends, we're repeating this workshop in 15 minutes. But otherwise, right now we'll have a 15-minute break, and then at after that 15-minute break, another round of concurrent workshops. Give these guys a round of applause.
Thanks for tuning in to the Auto Remarketing Podcast. For Nick Zulovich and our entire Auto Remarketing crew, my name is Joe Overby, and we'll catch you next time.